Today is Monday, January 2nd, 2023, and I want to say Boker Tov Mevorach to all the wonderful people in front of me. As I mentioned yesterday, there's no shir on Sunday. We have the Brit, and I have to correct Morty. Morty wrote that it's the Brit of a grandson. He made me 25 years younger. It's the Brit of a great-grandson, Be'ezrat Hashem. And I can see right down the line that everyone paskins when it's a Yotzei Dofen, the Brit is on Sunday, not on Shabbos. So even though from the Gemara you could go either way, it's a Machlokes, and logically it seems makes more sense it should be on Shabbos because it's a regular birth. But no, that's the other opinion, that it's not a regular birth and you don't have count 8 days. That's only when there's Yilud. And here you should do the Brit the next day. And that's the Machleket. But Halacha L'maisa, the OU Psak, and my son asked the Mohel, my grandson asked the Mohel, and I heard in America too, someone told me about his Bukhar was born on Yotzei Dofen, and again the Brit was delayed from Shabbos to Sunday. So Be'ezrat Hashem, that's Sunday, but now it's Monday, and we can teach and respond. I have quite a few emails already on yesterday's Shia. But first of all, coming back to Rabbi Wolpe, who I mentioned, a Talmud listening, Rabbi Moshe Katz, tells me I was correct. He came from a non-religious home. And he tells the following story. I knew an Altamira who accompanied Rav Lezer Yehuda Fingo, Mira Rosh Yeshiva, on a fundraising trip to Berlin. Rav Shlomo Wolpe's parents heard that their son's Rebbe is visiting Berlin, and these people, out of respect for their son's deen, came to the home where he was staying and brought a bouquet of flowers. And this is so fascinating that here it's parents who are irreligious in Berlin coming to the Mira Rosh Yeshiva, and Reb Lezer Yehuda was so sensitive and warm towards them and asked his hostess if she had a vase for the beautiful flowers. And he also quotes Reb Dayan Isidore Grunfeld's daughter from London, that how did Reb Wolpe become frum? That at university he was involved with the Jewish Students Union, and that's where he heard about Rav Hirsch and heard Rav Hirsch's viewpoint, and that's exactly similar to Sarah Schneier. How did she broaden and how did she reach the decision to open Beis Yaakov? And the credit goes to Rabbi Spitzer in Vienna, who preached and would call Rav Hirsch, and it opened her mind that we can go and Torim Derech Eretz and all that goes with it. Regarding what I spoke about, it could be in the Sunday Shir, the whole question of the Chazakah of Tavla Meitiv Du Meitiv Ramallah and the Rav's critique of Rabbi Rachman. So Rabbi Grunstein sent me in Panine HaRav, one of the volumes Rav Heschel put out, Rav Heschel Shechter, on the Rav, on Panine HaRav in Pei Samachay. He essentially says exactly what I said in class. I mean, it's not me. I heard the Rav with my own ears via tape. It was 75. And most Chazakot may have to be measured in context with the period in which a person is living. But when it comes to ontological chazaka, that's part of creation. And a woman is more anxious to marry than a man. And that's the Rav, and that's what I said in class. The person says essentially the same thing. Now, I dedicated yesterday's shiur to Rav Drukman, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. So again, this whole issue has come up that he was friendly and continued to be friendly with Rav alone, Mati alone. And there was an incident that happened years ago. I don't want to go into all the details, but the Nativ Meir was once the school for all brilliant children who came from homes that were a little broader than the general Haredi world. And there was a scandal there with a very important personality from the Haredi world. And again, Rav Drukman, he's being criticized here that he didn't go to the police. He only threw the man out. And I'm involved to a certain degree because that man's wife was my daughter's teacher. And I remember how much we suffered at a family level. And Rav Alon, I have to tell you as well, the father of my great-grandson, who's being, will enter the covenant of the Avram Avinu on Sunday, Be'ezrat Hashem, he was a Talmud of Rav Alon. I have another grandson, a Talmud. They loved Rav Alon. And I went when Rav Alon was first coming on to the public specter. I went with Barry Liebman. We went to hear him speak. And he spoke on Yontif Sheni. Gave his shiur on Yontif Sheni. All right. I don't know much. But on Yontif Sheni, there's not much that anyone can tell me that I don't know. I gave on to 2 years in the Kollel. And I was very impressed. I mean, this is a topic I know inside out. And I saw this man, knew what he was saying. And I just want to say again, you have to understand that years ago, we didn't go to the police. Whether it was right or wrong, I don't know. But that was the mentality. The Rebbe's criticized coming into the scandals with YU. The Rebbe's criticized, again, I'm mentioning names, but it's Tavi Yadua L'Rabim, Rabbi Macy Gordon. So the Rebbe told him, you can no longer teach in men. And he went on Aliyah, and he did good things here, but he didn't teach. He did other things for Klal Yisrael. And people criticized the Rebbe. Why didn't he go to the police? Then you had the stories that everyone gets involved with the principal of the high school. And I've done my own research, and I can tell you that there was no criminal intent. It was a mistake. You don't wrestle. I've said this to you in class over the decades. When you teach on a high school level, the students are trying to look up to you, to who you are. Can they emulate you? They're searching. It's not like teaching today in class. If I would ask you, what's your opinion of the Rebbe? You would say, we'd love to see him with a beard and payas and a bekesha. And Vic wanted to buy a cane for me, a shtecken with a silver top, a golden top. I told Vic, you need a bekesha. He said, he'll buy me a bekesha too, no problem. But when you're in high school, so... How did I impress my students? I have to be honest with you. I have students that we love each other from the 60s until today. Excuse me? How did I impress them? The bow tie was only a small part of it. My baseball knowledge. And I used to hear them say, boy, the Rebbe knows baseball. When I told them my father played sandlot ball with Hank Greenberg, it's like Ichab Gevorn de Gottel Hadar. George wrestled with students and he defeated them. And when you do that, Yehoshua, am I right? I'm happy to see you. Later today, I'll add your name. You come after class, don't run away, okay? I want to ask you a little bit about your background. So I know, lifnei mi ani omei, you understand? Okay, so he wrestled. But people criticized Rabbi Lamb. Why he didn't go to the police? He threw him out of YU, and he went on to Florida. And he didn't do anything wrong in Florida. And as I told you, I think in YU he didn't do anything wrong. But Morty, people criticized Rabbi Lamb, criticized the Rav. And you want Charlie criticize Aaron Rakefet. I told you the story, 1971, 72. A girl came over to me with tears in her eyes in Machon Gold, and some YU graduate had denied he ever went to YU. He wanted people to think he's a Chaim Berlin boy, he's a Taira Vadas boy, he's no longer alive, I don't want to mention his name. I had run-ins with him throughout the years that we taught together. And he said things to this girl, and she was, so she came and I helped her immensely. But ask one question, why didn't I go to the dean and say, fire this maneuver? You never thought in those terms. Like, I put a Band-Aid on. I handled the individual case. And we remained wonderful friends until today. She, over the years, her family contributed tens of thousands of dollars to Shvut Ami and Mayana. And it all goes back to the band that I put on in 1971-72. But you have to understand within the context. And we were wrong, but it just wasn't part of the ballpark today, at that time. Today you have Forum Takana, Baruch Hashem, you have an address to go to. And again, I repeat what I said yesterday very briefly. It's very hard for a Rebbe, a Talmud that he loves, hard for you to believe he did anything wrong. You have to forgive me. It's a human foible. And with Rabbi alone, I didn't believe it. I'm not his Rebbe, but I knew him. I didn't believe it at first until I spoke with the Lichtensteins, and Tova told me the story. Her own daughter said to her father, said to Rabaron, Daddy, how can you come out so strongly against Avalon? And Rabaron answered, if you would see the evidence that was given to me, you would understand my position. And I had trouble with my own children, the father of the Brit, as I mentioned a minute ago. He didn't believe it for many months. He couldn't believe it. All right. God have mercy on us. And this is why the Torah, it's very hard for me, I have to tell you, from the age of 11, I've only tried to be a frum Jew. It took me many decades to understand. Not everyone has that feeling. But I often say, you've heard me say it, and my wife quotes it, how does the Torah say lo tirzach? Mark, did you ever think of killing someone? How does the lo tinaf? God, adultery? Lo tignov? Robbing? It's impossible, Natan, it's impossible. But yet we're all humans, and the Torah had to tell us all this. So ani melamed zchut, I would not criticize Rav Drukman. What can I tell you? And Rabbi Grunstein writes to me, but Mati Alon was convicted, and the judge happened to be a Chorev graduate. She was a Chorev graduate. My daughters knew her from Chorev. And she convicted him, but she didn't send him to jail. And I always wondered, he built the Chorev, he was involved, Chorev to our hotel. They should have said, how can she be judged? She's subjective. She's not subjective. She's not objective. She's subjective. She has prejudice. But okay, I think recuse is the word. She should recuse herself. But I apologize, but still, you have to understand human emotions. And halavai, we can go b'kedusha v'tara hala. Now, regarding what we spoke about yesterday, it seems out of the sheer with what I quoted, that what people enjoyed most was the Adon Olam to Holy Night and Silent Night and the Machlekes HaPaiskim in the Jewish Post, in the Jerusalem Post. So my dear Talmud, Rabbi Dr. David Twesky, who again, you have to understand, he could have been Tolna Rebbe from Boston, and he chose not to be, but to me, he's a shtickle to Tolna Rebbe from Boston, that was his cousin, from Philadelphia. So he says, he lived in Seattle, I think he worked for Boeing or Microsoft, he was, you know, as a dog, but big in science. Our cousin in Seattle used to sing Kedusha for Musaf on Shabbos to the tune of the musical theme from the Academy Award-winning film The Godfather, about the Italian mafia. The Chazan was a Sansa Chassid who certainly didn't go to movies, but he evidently heard this musical score on the radio and liked it. Some of the members who knew where it came from felt sispashnisht. It's lomatim. How would you say? Not appropriate to use that music for Kedusha. Until someone pointed out that the Godfather went very well with the words, Hu Elokeinu, Hu Avinu. Godfather, there it is. All right, that's a good thought. I also want to thank Daniel Gottesman now coming into home field. Remember I told you with the Satmar Rav, Rabbi Yoelish, so his wife would appear in public next to him at Fabrengen, sitting from the time he took ill in 68 or 69, for the last 10 years, she would be with him in public, unheard of there. And I showed you a picture of Fabrengen and Zizitz, they've been on with them. So here he sent me pictures of Reb Arala lighting Hanukkah candles this past Hanukkah. And who is standing right in back of Reb Arala? There's his wife. There's the Vishnu Tzarebbe's daughter. There's his wife, Sasha Hager Teitelbaum. Here's the whole Olam, and she's standing right over there. Now, I don't know why she's there, because it's not his house. In his house, Mela, I can understand she wants to be up, say, Hanukkah candles. It could be she's a tzaddiket, which is very possible, knowing her background. And she davens three times a day. And she was davening in the shul. This is after mincha. So she came in from the women's section to be there next to her husband when he left. Okay, now let's come into the heavyweight material. I want to thank Jack. My first shiur in Satmar was given on the 22nd of November, 2021. So that means we've been on Satmar and finishing explaining historically for over a year and a few months. Fine. Gentlemen, we have to be honest. Satmar has had unbelievable success. It is the largest Jewish educational system in the United States. They say that in New York State it rivals many of the public schools in numbers of students that it has. More than the success within Satmar, it, according to Rabbi Shalom Gold in my famous dialogue, debate with him a number of years ago in Yom HaTzmut, Rabbi Gold accuses Satmar, and there's a lot of truth to it, the entire Lakewood, Chaim Berlin, and tells that they're not religious Zionists is a result of Satmar. Okay. And this is the Satmar Shita. The New York Times is going crazy against Satmar. They just came out. If you're up to date, I have it in front of me. How Hasidic schools reap the windfall of Seltzer education funding. Look how many pages this article is. On and on, page after page, page after page. The New York Times last week. It's not the first time they've gone after Satmar. Now, Satmar causes them a lot of problems because the New York Times, all right, they see Rakefet. Until Rakefet opens his mouth, they don't want to destroy him. Of course, I look like they look. Oh, when I open my mouth and I speak about Shmirat Shabbat and Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, they go crazy. These are assimilating Jews, all intermarried. Their kids being raised as goyim, Christmas trees in their homes. And Satmar creates a tremendous problem because the minute you see them, you know that they are Jews. This is the way my grandfather lived. This is the way my grandfather looked. Can I help you? Like, what's that fellow looking? No. Like a monkey peeking in. Satmar, they're furious. All right, Satmar's had tremendous success. Gentlemen, everyone listening, is this the right way to go? Is this where we should be in the year 2024? Morty, do you know my vote that I say it in your time? Eisehu chacham haro'et hanolad. You don't open your mouth in 23 without thinking what will be 1 year from now in 24. So please don't correct me. 2024. Okay, I'm going to spend a lot of time now, and it'll take a number of weeks. But when I'm finished, I think I've made a very powerful statement, and on a number of different levels. Number one, I want to repeat a story that I believe I told when I dealt with Lubavitch. And I have verification that the story, the people telling it, it's absolutely reliable. This story appeared in Kfar Chabad magazine, and it appeared on Hanukkah time. And let me see if they give the exact date. And what I'm holding in front of me is an English translation. And they certify it's totally correct. Adapted by Yerachmiel Tillis from Kfar Chabad magazine. And he published it in Tzfat 2002. And they cite people who knew the person who's speaking, and they absolutely certify it. Now, the name of the person is who tells the story is Rabbi Moshe Chaim Greenwald. I don't believe he's alive today. And his father, Avram Tzvi Greenwald, was born in Lodz, Poland in 1911. His father died when Moshe Chaim was only 8 years old, left his mother alone with seven young orphans. So she sent Reb Moshe Chaim's father to live with her cousin, Rabbi Menachem Zemba, in pre-war Warsaw. Now, a few words about Rabbi Menachem Zemba. When you mention his name, the truth is I should stand just to mention his name. I just, with meniscus, it's easier for me to sit. But we're talking about a Gadol Shebegadolim, a man who was a genius in Shas and Paiskin, the Rambam. What we lost in the Holocaust, this is the famous Reb Chaim Zemba, who perished in the Warsaw Ghetto. A guy named Rothkopf wrote about him in Jewish Action, and a guy named Rakefet republished it in Rakefet Aron, Chelik Aleph, actually. And I wrote that they attribute the Warsaw Ghetto uprising that so many Frum Jews participated in to a psak from Rav Menachem Zemba to go ahead. I got a call from Lucy Davidovich, Zichrona Levracha. She was a very famous professor of Jewish history, particularly the Holocaust, taught at Stern College. And she asked me, where did you get the information? And I said to her, from Hillel Zeidman's memoir, Rabbi Hillel Zeidman, who also was a survivor and was in the Warsaw Ghetto. And he wrote a memoir, Yomam Vasha. I don't think it's in English. I have it in Hebrew. I don't think it was translated into English, but I may be wrong. I taught his daughter many years later in Michlala. She's the one who published the volume on Sarah Schneira. So Professor Davidovich told me, she says she knows that source, but she doesn't want, she can't be certain he's correct, she says, because there's certain things in Yomam Warsaw that are wishful thinking, not reality. All right, many years went by, I came to Israel, and I found in Israel, my world always calls for Menachem Zemba. If you go into the Chazon Ish's world and I go to Yisrael, you'll find that they accused the religious Zionists of making this up, that Rabbi Nachum Zell would never give a psak to fight the Germans. I have a feeling it's a true story, and he did give this psak. Later, he was reburied in the State of Israel, and that's the story I tell. I remember I was a kid in Bnei Akiva, but we hung on to every word of news we got from Israel, that when they brought his body over, Menachem Parish was then a Chaver Knesset in Fagudat Yisrael, and he spoke and he suddenly said, I want to tell you what's happening today. Everyone in the Knesset, please rise. And he said, this is out of respect. They're bringing over the bier, the remains of who was Reb Menachem Zemba. And there was the Olam Hazeh, the left wing, today what was it called then? It's not that, the Shamatzir element, and Uri Avneri, I shouldn't even mention his name, but all right. And they were furious that he asked the Knesset to rise. I'll never forget Reb Menachem Zemba. Okay, now. So this kid is raised by his uncle, Reb Menachem Zemba. Okay. In 1928, the future seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe married the daughter of the sixth Rebbe. And the wedding was in Warsaw, and Reb Menachem Zemba had heard about this chatan that he knew Kala Torah Kula by heart, and he wanted to meet him. So he took the nephew with him, and they went during the Sheva Brachas to meet the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And Menachem Zemba was sitting there transfixed. Whatever he mentioned, Reb Menachem Mendel knew it by heart. Baki b'kol ha-Torah kula. And it was Hanukkah time. And when they were ready to leave, the future Lubavitcher Rebbe looks up and says, quote, there are only a few days left until Hanukkah. Do you know why it is customary in Hasidic circles to celebrate and make special parties on the fifth night of Hanukkah? And this is a Hasidic tradition that it's Leil Chamishi that they make the Hanukkah Fabrenyan. And this kid's father, the nephew, Reb Menachem Zemba, the uncle, they didn't have an answer. They looked intently at the Rebbe, waiting for an answer. And the Rebbe continued, quote, it happens that the fifth day of Hanukkah can never occur on a Shabbat. This represents great darkness, such that even the great holiness of the Shabbat cannot penetrate. However, the fifth candle symbolizes that the light of Hanukkah can illuminate even such intense darkness. Hanukkah can do what even Shabbat cannot do. This is the duty of every Jew, wherever he may find himself, be it in Warsaw, in Moscow, or in London, underline London, to illuminate even the greatest darkness. All right, they walked away, 1928. The Holocaust came. They went through the hell. This kid's father survived. The nephew survived, but he was a broken individual. Finally, after leaving the DP camps, came to America, came to Philadelphia, where his uncle, Moshe Chaim Greenwald, the person telling the story, is named for him, for whom I am named, his uncle, an Amshin of a Chassid who had settled in America before World War I, welcomed him with open arms. and try to rehabilitate him and start a new life after the terrible Holocaust trauma. Finally, his uncle and the umption of a Rebbe pressured my father to meet my mother, who also lived through the war. And his mother, coming from Alexandra Hasidim, they were very big, you should know this. Alexandra today is very small. No one heard of it, basically. I think it's B'nai Brak, there's a shtickel in Alexandra Rebbe. It was once as big as Ger, bigger than Lubavitch in Poland, pre-World War II. And they made a shidduch. His mother had gone to Canada where she had family, and they made a shidduch, they married, they moved to Canada. Before the wedding, because the young man had mentioned that he had been to see Reb Menachem Mendel during his Sheva Brachas with Reb Menachem Zemba, so his father-in-law to be and his uncle insisted, "You met the sixth Rebbe, go to Lubavitch, Eastern Parkway, and get a bracha from the sixth Rebbe." And they went, and during the Yechidat with the sixth Rebbe on 770, during his Yechidat with Reb Yosef Yitzchak, thank you, the sixth Rebbe, he mentioned to the sixth Rebbe that he had been to the Sheva Brachas, he had met with Reb Menachem Zemba, his son-in-law. So the sixth Rebbe said, "Oh, if you met my son-in-law in Warsaw, then go downstairs." This was 770. The sixth Rebbe was upstairs. The seventh Rebbe was downstairs in his office. He was already involved in chinuch for his father-in-law. "Go downstairs and say hello to my son-in-law." So they go downstairs. Reb Menachem Mendel welcomes them with open arms. And where are they? It's the month of Kislev. And the Rebbe looks at them and he says, "Why doesn't the fifth day of Hanukkah ever happen on a Shabbos? Why do the Hasidim always make the big farbrenging on the fifth night?" And he tells them exactly the Devar Torah that this young man had heard back in 1928. It is the duty of every Jew, wherever he may find himself, be it in New York or now it's no longer Warsaw or Moscow, New York or Philadelphia, where he's coming from, or London, to eliminate even the greatest darkness. All right. My father was stunned. The exact same insight came back to him word for word as the Rebbe had told him 20 years before in the Warsaw Hotel. All right. Charlie, after getting married, my father served as a teacher and rabbi for the Adath Israel congregation in Washington Heights. Did you know him? No. Okay. But Adath Israel is not the Breuers. That was further down. Like, who was there? Rabbi Krauss? Rabbi Krauss. That was Rabbi Simcha Krauss's father. Okay. When he was 5 years old, his in-laws brought them to Toronto, and he started teaching in the Satmar Yeshiva in Toronto. And he became very close to the Satmar viewpoint. He still respected the Lubavitch Rebbe, but his own outlook became very close to Satmar. Before my marriage, this is the son already, who was born in America, Before my marriage in 1968, my father said that although we were not Lubavitch Hasidim, he wanted me to receive the Lubavitch Rebbe's blessing before my wedding, just as he had done before his. And you also knew the Rebbe from 1928. It was not easy, the scheduled appointment. They wanted to give me an appointment a year from now, but he insisted he's getting married, and they walk into the Rebbe, and the seventh Rebbe we're talking about now, and they're ready to give him the kvittel, the blessing, the marriage. And the Rebbe looks at his father and says, it's more than 20 years since you last came here. It's high time, especially since my father-in-law sent you to me. And the Rebbe continues, gives him a bracha, the wedding, and then his father apologizes to the Rebbe, but he says, I have to ask you a question. Living in a Satmar community, I often hear complaints and criticisms about Lubavitch. How can you associate with people who are secular, religious, and against the Torah? How can you put on tefillin with people who are not even observant? The verse in Psalms states, whoever hates you, O God, I will hate. My father apologized profusely, saying he didn't mean to criticize, but only to understand the Lubavitcher Rebbe's viewpoint for himself and so he could explain it to others. The Rebbe answered, quote, suppose your daughter and one of your zealous neighbors were to abandon Judaism, God forbid. What would he do? Would he try to bring her back to Torah and mitzvah? Or would he say, whoever hates God, I will hate. Sever relations and never want to see her again. The Rebbe continued, of course you would say, his own daughter is different, as it says, do not remain oblivious to the plight of your relatives. The Rebbe's expression became serious. He banged on the table and said, in God's eyes, every Jew is as dear and precious as an only child to my father-in-law. Every Jew is a relative who cannot be ignored. And then the seventh Rebbe, notice everything he would attribute to the sixth Rebbe, to his father-in-law. The Rebbe looked at me and my father penetratingly and said, we will conclude with a blessing. It is known that all Hasidim celebrate the fifth night of Hanukkah. The reason is because the fifth night of Hanukkah can never occur on Shabbos. This represents a great darkness. The fifth candle thus symbolizes the great light of Hanukkah, which can illuminate even such an intense darkness. This is the duty of every Jew, whether he may find himself, be it in New York or Toronto, or London. Every Jew was a part of God above, his only child. When you illuminate his soul, then even the furthest Jew in the darkest place can be awakened. Wow. And he describes his father was shocked. It's now the third time he's hearing from the Rebbe the same drasha, and London remains constant. 10 years passed. In 1978, my younger brother got engaged to a girl from London. They're now going to London for the wedding, the Sheva Brachas. And just before leaving our house to fly there for the wedding, Natan talking about weddings now. Wow, it's very close to yours. You know what you remind me? The only day I ever missed in the Rav Shir was the day of my wedding. It's the only day I missed. It's interesting when I look back. And I never made up that Shir properly. As much as I copied notes from others, wasn't Einadon Meshmiel Riyah. Okay. Anyway, they're now flying to London. Right before they're leaving and going to the airport, a highly respected member of the Satma community came in and asked to speak privately with my father. He burst into tears and confided to him that his daughter had forsaken Judaism. 2 weeks ago, to the great embarrassment of himself and his wife, she ran off with a non-Jewish boyfriend and fled to London. The Satma Chassid pleaded with my father, "You're going to London. See if you can locate my daughter." My brother's wedding was a joyful event. On the first night of Sheva Brachot, my father told his new relative the story and asked his advice. The bride's father told my father that he himself had no idea what to do, but he recommended a Lubavitcher friend, Rav Avram Yitzchak Gluck, who had accomplished many missions for the Lubavitcher Rebbe and helped many lost souls throughout Europe find their way back. My parents remained in London for 12 days. One day during Hanukkah, Rabbi Gluck called, "Come quickly, I have a nice surprise for you." They come to his house, and there's a girl sitting in the living room crying profusely. Rabbi Gluck had located the girl, and she wanted to return with them to Hanukkah, to Toronto. As my father looked around the room, his eyes fell on the kindled menorah. It had 5 burning candles. And he recalled the Rebbe's words to him and how the Rebbe each time stressed London. I can go on and on. The story doesn't end here. They come back and they go to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe gives them a bracha for what they did, brought the girl back. And the Rebbe gives his father a bracha that you should rejoice at your grandchild's wedding. And this is a Holocaust survivor. And he dances at his granddaughter's wedding. He dies right afterwards, fulfilled the Rebbe's bracha. Now, this story needs no comment. Is it better to be positive or to be negative? It is better to maledict everyone and this is not a good Jew and that is not a good Jew. Look at Chabad. And I want to go one step further. The Satmar world had a tremendous tragedy a few years ago. 2 young girls from the finest Satmar families converted to some form of Protestantism. And it was all over YouTube, the conversion ceremony. I couldn't eat after I saw it with my own eyes. The water, the sprinkling, the acceptance of Oto Ha'ish. But do you remember what I said in class? These girls, what did they find in this Protestant version? Love. Love for everybody. Satmar, what do you find? This one is no good. That one is no good. The State of Israel is no good. There's 7 million plus Jews here. We're all no good. Don't vote in the elections. The majority of the Jews in the Knesset today are Shem Torah Mitzvah. The absolute majority. You got to understand. In all the parties, they're from Jews, but in the Likud, the majority of the Likudnikim are Shomer Shabbos. I hope that the people in the Mafta, in the religious parties, in Aguda and Shas, I hope they're Shomer Shabbos. The majority. Chabad, have you ever heard of a scandal like that? All right, I admit there must be some Chabadnikim who fell away. But percentage-wise, they're doing better than YU, and Ben, I don't want to hurt your feelings, they're doing better than Lakewood. The percentage of continuity, the shluchim, their children, and I'll tell you something else. There have been very little scandals in Chabad. Now you just think how much money runs through their hands. And I don't want to give examples. Let me not be negative. But compared to other from Jews, Chabad, you have to admire what they've accomplished. Now, and let me tell you, a Talmud who I'll talk about later today, Aryeh Liebman, he sent me a video that just appeared on one of the Chabad websites. And generally I watch videos. I am not overwhelmed. I know what life is about. I know what Torah is about. I know what outreach is about. This video was fabulous. Sometimes no can be constructive. You know what the video is? He's a YU graduate. All right. And he evidently runs a kosher facility. Doesn't identify everything, but from what I saw, the store he's working, he owns. And he tells the story. He graduated YU, and life moved on. And I became a little bit less frum. I wasn't putting on tefillin. And one time I'm walking on the street, he's describing the neighborhood, I don't recognize it, and there's a Lubavitcher shaluach saying to him, "Are you Jewish?" I've had this happen. It happened to me twice. It happened once in Manhattan. I'm walking with two students, and we look like goyim, and this guy, "Are you Jewish? Did you put on tefillin today?" My students wanted to kill him. I said, "No, relax, he's a Baal Tshuva. He's doing his thing." It happened to me at the Kotel, and there I was also with students, and they told that guy off. I was upset. I said, "Why did you tell him off?" It also happened at the airport a third time, and there I had a little fun. I was not too nice, because I said, "Mama, I told you the story years ago." They stopped it. "Did you put on tefillin today?" I said, "Did I put on tefillin? I haven't missed a day in my life." Right? And then I said to him, "No, look at me. How old am I? I don't have a mother. I don't have a father. First day, you don't put on tefillin. What am I telling you? Figure it out." The poor guy, it's about Shiva. These people, they don't learn much. It's not like we Litvakin walk around Bekiyim and Shas and Paiskim, clean-shaven, dressed with bow ties. This poor guy. So finally I broke down. I told him, I said, "Look, my father died Chol HaMoed Sukkos. In Israel, we never put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. No one puts on. It's one of the miracles of Israel." And I said, "My mother died at 7 o'clock. I daven 5:30. My brother in Israel daven 6. We were told, they called my brother to the hospital, to the hospice that she was in. He's a doctor, so we had to deal with the hospice that any question in halacha to call me, any medical question, my brother." So they called my brother, but we had already daven, so we didn't miss that day of tefillin. She was buried a few hours later, so it was not a shaila. The next day was the second day. But so this guy, they say, "Are you Jewish?" He says, "Yes." "Did you put on tefillin today?" And the guy says, "Yes, I put on." He didn't want to get involved. "No, I don't need your help." And he walks away. 2 years later, the interviewer, remember that this story came out? He said, "I started thinking, what did I do? What you wanted to put tefillin on me?" And I walked away. He says, from that day on, he has never missed a day of putting on tefillin, the Kain Hala. So this is Chabad. And this takes me one step further, dealing with the contemporary issue. And I alluded to it yesterday. And I have to say, the Torah world that I'm part of, the religious Zionist world, taken on a Hasidic tinge. If you see the Alonim giving out, there's what's it called, Karov Elecher, I believe, the one that's mamish Hasidic, but it's geared for our my world. Has the yeshivat upanot? Excuse me. I apologize. As you know, whenever I deal with Balei Tshuva, I cry. I can't help it. You have to understand what the world was like where I grew up. 700,000 plus Jews in the Bronx. I don't think there were 10 families Shomer Shabbos. Certainly out of the East Bronx beyond Rav Vick, you didn't even have 5 families Shomer Shabbos. So it's a Baruch Hashem. It's a great world today, and it's going to become even greater. So the question came up, what's happening to the Mizrahi world? And Yutet Kislev was just celebrated in some Chesda Yeshivat. And some graduates, I don't want to go into detail, Rabbi Grinstein sent me the information, Dov Harbital, others, tremendous criticism. What's happened to the yeshivas, the Chesda yeshivas? This was a world of Litvish learning. And here, Rabbi Habertal, this is the picture of Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and he calls Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and that if he were alive today, he'd be very upset with these Hasidic influences. It has no place in our world. And I want to tell you, I totally and absolutely disagree. I'm not a chassid, but Yutet Kislev should become an international Torah holiday. For one simple reason, what Chabad has become, what Chabad has accomplished, it's all over the world. Even Satmar, the two Rebbeim, Reb Zalman and the Baron, we spoke about it a week or two ago, even they acknowledge the greatness of Chabad today. And Ribbono Shel Olam, if the youngsters want to learn Tanya and Likutei Torah and they're inspired by it, Adarabba V'Adarabba. Torah doesn't stand still, and Torah has to be seen within context. And we're living in a world today where the attack against God has been eliminated from the United States. Biden believes in God. Biden's a good Catholic. If the Catholics had any courage, they would excommunicate him. The man fighting openly for abortions, etc. What are we talking about? Europe believes in God. Churches. The only churches surviving are the tourist attractions for stupid Israelis who pay money to go into a church and see some paintings. You understand? This is where we're at today. I told you, in America, the only place people go to church, I was riding through the Bible Belt on a Sunday morning in Texas. I couldn't believe every church, the parking lot's filled to capacity. Outside of that, Mandachashmen. And today you need warmth and barankite and tradition and continuity and pride how we have rebuilt the Torah world. And if Yutet Kislev adds to it, Adarabba V'Adarabba. Okay. So this is one point I want to make. It's a minor point. It's number one. Number two, also minor. Number three, that's major. Now, there's something else about Satmar. As you recalled, the Rebbe, Satmar Rebbe, came out against speaking Hebrew. Coming out against speaking Hebrew on a daily basis, it's idiocy. Tell me, open the Chumash. What language is the Chumash in? Hebrew. What do you have in the Chumash? Kiddusha v'tara, mitzvah? What you have? History. conversations, everyday events. Dor HaMidbar, greatness and sins. What language is it in? Hebrew. What language did God create the world in? Hebrew. What language did he speak with Moshe Rabbeinu? And Natan, I admit, in Lakewood, they convinced me they're not good at Yiddish. And I'm still convinced it was in Yiddish, but I have to be honest with you, it was in Hebrew. Emotionally. I heard Vic speaking, I didn't know who was talking, it was a Karen Zovit, I didn't see them. And I heard Vic this morning talking Yiddish as I come around the bend. Ah, was I excited. He's talking Yiddish with a Greek Jew. His name, Rabbi Avishai David. Okay? Don't tell me where he comes from. I yet knew his mother and father. He's a Greek Jew. But what can I tell you? Sink or swim. You wanted to learn in a day school in those years? They've been retnish Yiddish, versteknish Yiddish. No hat nish da chance. There's no chance of success. Okay. I have a colleague, Harab Avri Ari Shvat, of American origins. I yet knew his parents. Shvat, I think in English was pronounced C-H-W-A-T, Shvat. In Hebrew it's Shvat, Shevet, actually. Maybe he calls his name Shevet. He wrote a wonderful volume, Laharim. He works for Beit HaRav Kook. I think he's their archivist, if I'm not mistaken. He's a wonderful individual. He wrote a volume, Laharim et HaDegel. And it's a whole volume about the importance of the Israeli flag. He quotes the Rav, you know, the Rav's famous part that the Degel has some kedusha to it. Jews died. Degel was bloody. The Degel was in the death camps. People made the symbol of the what would become this flag of the State of Israel. Wrote a beautiful volume, the Degel, what it represents, the Shvatim, the Degolim, the Midrashim. V'hadiba bi'ivrit b'mekarot ha'yahadot. And you can find he has tens and tens of makarot from Chazal, that Hebrew, it's a mitzvah to speak the language. Yerushalmi Shabbat, Perek Aleph, Halakha Gimel, Kol Mishahu Kavu Beretz Yisrael Vochel Chulav B'Tahara Umedaber B'Loshon HaKodesh Muftach Lo Shehu Mechayei Olam Haba. And you have in Shulchan Aruch in Halach Lamaisa Orech Chaim Siman Shin Zayin Sif Tet Zion, where it talks about what you're allowed to read on Shabbat. And the also likro besichat chulin v'sipurei milchomet haynu dafka im k'tuvim b'loshin laz avo b'loshin hakodesh shari. And the Mishnah Brewer explains the halashkan bi'atzmo yesh bo kedusha v'lo meid b'min of divrei Torah. That when you read something in Hebrew, you do more than just read. You improve your Hebrew, you learn Hebrew, it helps you in divrei Torah. And in other words, that even to read these type of books, history books, not even about the Jews, it would be mutter in Hebrew. So what do you see from that? That you can speak Hebrew. It's an everyday language. Oh, Vayikra Rabba, Pashalamid Bet, Omar Rav Huna, Beshengba Kapara, Beshvil Dalet Devarim, Negalu Yisrael Mitzrayim, Shalom Shanu et Shmam, Vil Etle Shonam, Velo Amrula Shonhara, Velo Nitzabe Neyem Echad Mechem Parutz Be'eva. Why were the Jews Zaycha L'Geulat Mitzrayim retain Jewish names? That's a topic unto itself. That even when we gave a kid a secular name, but he always had a Jewish name as well, that kept us Jewish. But above all, speaking Hebrew. What do you mean speaking Hebrew? Speaking Hebrew on a daily, mundane, ongoing basis. All right, there were other things. They didn't speak Lashon Hara. They weren't involved in a riot. That's a tremendous compliment to the Dor HaMidbar, to the Dor Geulei Mitzrayim, that as bad as Egypt was and the Memtet Sharei Tuma, but there was a limit how much they descended. And speaking Hebrew, crucial. And I don't have to tell you, in modern times, you talk about speaking Hebrew. This is what unites the Jews across the world. This is what enables us to daven. This is what enables us to open a siddur. David, be well, kultuv. This is what enables us to go further. This is what enables the whole interconnection. You should have seen in communist Russia when the refusnikim, and you got to remember, was a whole process. What woke them up? What created it? All right, the Six-Day War, I spoke about it. I don't want to repeat myself now. I don't have time. But wow, what went on in Russia? And then people are in refusal. Why are we in refusal? They start asking, searching, seeking. And here, people raised in a totally different language, and a difficult language. It's not a language that, if you know English, you can major French, you can major Spanish, but Russian is an entirely different alphabet. And suddenly recognize Jews, Hebrew is our language. And what went on in the, here, you saw with your own eyes, who was sitting next to me a few weeks ago in this very chair, Yosef Tzadik Mendelovich. He arrived in Israel after 11 years in jail, speaking fluent Hebrew. I mean, just think for a minute. I had to translate. You heard what we said in here. Yosef and I are telling you what we lived and experienced. I translated him, his first public talk, from Hebrew into English. Comes knowing Hebrew, unites us. This is the secret of Jewish existence. All right. In Shmatin, number 177, Ari Shvat had a beautiful article, HaMitzvah Ledaber Ivrit VaHashimush The Lashon HaKodesh BeInyan Eichol. And he shows you tens and tens of sources that you can use Hebrew, you should use Hebrew, as an absolute daily ongoing language. And here, not difficult to refute Satmar, and very, very difficult to understand how they continue with that shita. Now, I also have a communication from him, June 14th, 2022, about this very topic. And here we get involved with what the Satmar, remember I quoted to you in class from the Kuntres on Hebrew language, yet we find that there's a lot of Aramaic, which shows that you don't necessarily have to use Hebrew. There's nothing special about Lashon HaKodesh on a daily language. You can use Aramaic, you can use Yiddish, you can use any other language, and you find Aramaic in Gemara and in Chazal and even in the Torah itself. And I think the approach has to be, and here Ari Shvat quotes the Torah Tamimim in a Kuntres he wrote in Aramaic. Yeah, there's no question that you, Torah, if I can call them sinful here, if I can summarize, Torah was given as an internal document. it can thrive in any culture, in any environment. And of course, we're influenced by our surroundings. My native language is English, and I'm at home in English. But that doesn't mean to the exclusion of Lashon HaKodesh. Yes, the Aramaic certainly has a certain kedusha. Once you see Aramaics, if you've learned Sefer Daniel, you have sentence after sentence in Aramaic. In the Chumash, you have isolated words, yagashahaduta, with loving. It's a pillar of testimony in Aramaic. But yes, it doesn't exclude the basic fact that a Jew, to be a Jew, has to be bilingual. Hebrew always has to be part of our gestalt, of our abilities. Without it, we lose our connection to davening, to understanding davening, understanding Shema, our connection to the totality of Jewish experience. And in modern times, Am Yisrael Chai. What Kalbach, there are problems with Kalbach, but the schut of that song is overwhelming. It became a national anthem for the Jews in refusal. And I don't know if I'm reading into Kalbach or giving him credit, but Shlach et Ami, and that became the universal crying theme on every poster for all the Jews working for Russian Jewry, communist empire, getting them out. And many of them were not religious, or at least not religious when they started their involvement. If I could draw up the posters, I would have said, "No, you help me. Shlach et ami v'yavduni." That's what's important. And Kalbach, when he composed Am Yisrael Chai, what comes afterwards? Old Avinu Chai. And I read into it, maybe he meant it, I don't know. Maybe someone is an expert on Kalbach, maybe the professor, Dr. Ophir, will tell me. I read into it, Am Yisrael Chai is not enough. Am Yisrael Chai, when there's continuity, when you honor your father, when you continue the tradition, Old Avinu Chai. But he has a big schut. That Am Yisrael Chai became literally a national anthem for the Jews behind the Iron Curtain. And Baruch Hashem, we pulled off a miracle. I don't know what the future holds, if they can remain there. Chabad has put in probably billions of dollars to the Ukraine and Russia. I saw it with my own eyes when I went back a few years ago. You can't believe the buildings, the Torah, the stores, the kosher food available. Don't know what the future holds, because what's happening now is very frightening. Russia is just bombing and bombing, and the world stands by. No one's going to war to help the Ukraine. And could be the Jews all have to get out. As a religious Zionist, I would be happy to see them all get out. But vayavduni, shalach et ami vayavduni. And this is Hebrew. Without the language, the connection is lost. All right, that's very easy to refute. And I want to show you something. I try to give these out yesterday. I'll try again to give out freebies. It shocks me that no one takes freebies. If I was a kid your age sitting in front of, could you picture Rav Soloveitchik giving out? I would grab it, the freebie of Mayan. This is the latest issue of Mayan. Morty, do you know what Mayan is? Boy, and you're a graduate of the Kollel 1993-1994, and you live in West Hempstead, and you don't know what Mayan is. Well, I can say your Rebbeim should be called to order. And I'll call to order. You studied by a guy named Rakefet. I'm going to call him to order that he didn't teach Mayan. Mayan, this represents the greatness in German Torah Jewry. It's a combination of Torah and academia. It was edited for 50 years by Dr. Emanuel, if you knew him, the optometrist. He was Rehov King George, something very special. The best in the Hirshian outlook. So today it comes out of Shalavim. It's in memory of Rabbi Shlomo Uman. They put it out. Terrific. Moshe Katan is the editor. It's just something very special. Mechon Shlomo Uman Sha'al Yad Yeshivat Shalavim. Now, I couldn't believe it. The second article in the latest Mayan, I Xeroxed it. It just came out. This is Kislev Tashpag. Latest Mayan, the second article from the manuscript of Rav Avraham Moshe Avidan. Rav Avidan. His name will play big next week, Bezrat Hashem, when I reveal more secrets of life. He reached the rank of colonel in the army. He was a first-rate Talmud Chacham. He was responsible for all Psak Halacha in the military rabbinate. There was a problem here. He was told that he won't go on to become chief rabbi. His children, I think, learned in Panovich. They did not serve an army, and that knocked him out. At that moment in time, Shalavim needed a new Rosh Yeshiva. And Rabbi Avidan was available. It must be about 20 years that he remained Rosh Yeshiva in Shalavim. Then he was old age, retired. He died the last year or two. It's not ancient history. I quote him in Washington, Masa Bahar, I think it's called. I quote his safety because he was sourced there. And he has left an article, and I couldn't believe it. Here's the question, Sheila. Ani dover anglit bilvad. I only speak English. B'chol zman panui mishtadel ani lilmol Torah. Torah shebichtav, Talmud, Shulchan Aruch va'od. Noheg ani lilmod bi anglit. Liachrona, hey, early yedidi, ki olai lilmod lashon hakodesh. Sha'alti, she'ilati hi, ha'im belimud lashon hakodesh sheish mitzvah, v'olai lasot gam al cheshbon zman limud Torah, o she'adif lilmod Torah, v'lo lilmod lashon hakodesh. You understand this question? This is an American kid has to be a Baal Tshuva. I can understand this question very well. He's learning today to learn. Wow. Everything's in English. Schottenstein, I should say. Art scroll. They tell me the Rashi, what Art scroll has with Rashi, with the translations, with the footnotes. I'm talking the five-volume set. That the people who put it out might even be listening. They happened to pick me up on YU Torah decades ago. And wow, everything's in English. So a kid can sit and learn Kol HaTorah, basically. The Midrashim are in English. Zohar is in English. I don't know, Tosfot, I heard they want to translate. I don't know if they have or haven't. Mishnah Brura in English. Oh, I had to break my teeth as a high school kid learning Mishnah Brura. So this kid, imagine, he can go through life learning and never knowing Hebrew. Or does he have to take time off and master Hebrew and learn in Lashon HaKodesh, and certainly daven in Lashon HaKodesh? And Rav Avidan goes into a chakira, what is the mitzvah of speaking Hebrew, learning Hebrew? Is it important just for the language itself? Well, no, maybe the language has no inherent kedusha, but you need it. It's a machshir. He uses a brisker word already. It's a machshir. You have to learn Hebrew so you can learn Kol HaTorah Kula in Hebrew. And it's a very nice article. There's no question learning Hebrew is important. There's no question that without learning Hebrew, how are you going to daven properly? And how are you going to understand the learning properly? But it could very well be that it's just a makshir and it's not an inherent mitzvah. And he goes through all the sources, and obviously he reaches the conclusion that Hebrew is very important unto itself, because our whole world is reflected in Lashon HaKodesh, Briyat Olam, Yetziat Mitzrayim, and all that goes with it. So the Sakmuruv Kvaldo Bimkomo Omeid, but when he comes out against speaking Hebrew on a daily basis, and it's just in Kriyas HaTorah and Limud Torah, that is the easiest division or part of his theology to refute. Lashon HaKodesh is unique, it's special. The Rambam calls it, Rav Avidan gives you the source in Perish HaMishnayot, that it's certainly a mitzvah kala. It's not maybe a mitzvah like Shabbat, but certainly a mitzvah kala. On a simple sociological level, without Lashon HaKodesh, we would not have survived thousands of years of gullus, and it's one of the greatest miracles of our time that I hear my grandchildren and great-grandchildren, they all have to be geniuses because it took me 50 years to be comfortable speaking Hebrew. And at the age of 2, their Hebrew is quicker and faster and richer than their great-grandfathers. What a miracle of rebirth, Eliezer ben Yehuda, Kol HaKavod Lecha. And Charlie, you should know, part of his family are just like us in our world. Chaz came back, B'lei V'nefesh, the Kol HaTorah Kula. Part of the family in Yerushalayim. Yeah, they're probably spread out more today. So to reiterate, we haven't touched the real refutation. That will begin next week and last a few weeks. And Mark, you don't have to take any notes beginning next week, because everything I'll be saying will appear in publication in the 30th Yotzeit volume in memory of the Rav. Then, right or wrong? Okay, you look tired. Are you working with New York at night, with America? I know, when do you look tired? Okay, so to reiterate, what have we done so far today? We started the refutation. The story with the Lubavitcher Rebbe is very powerful. It's powerful, it reveals the Rebbe, but it's more than that. It's a whole attitude. And what Lubavitch has accomplished over the world, believe me, we are so much richer today with Lubavitch. It's all over the world. And I have to tell you, when you talk about Russia and what we went through there, and again, it's now 30 plus years since the Iron Curtain fell. It's time already to start writing the history of what went on. And you have to understand that Lubavitch remained firm with all the agonies that they had in Russia. You know, it's not a simple matter. Stalin, what happens afterwards, Khrushchev already, it became a little easier, but how many lives were killed, how many mechanchim, rabbanim, sheikhtim, and they were always there, always there. people came out of Russia. The stories are legendary. Rabbi Zilbert, I knew him. I mean, he's a walking Sefer Torah. So they finally get out, and his son wants to take it, to go to Panovich, and he comes in for the exam, and he apologizes to the Rosh Yeshiva. He says, "I only know Nizikin and Nashim by heart." That's how he comes at her. And he knew it by heart. That Pshuto Kumashmao. But he apologizes. His father didn't teach him more. I mean, this was Kala Kavol, that positive attitude. And the Balei Tshuva and the Tefillin. As much as it bothers me as a Litvak, I should ask someone to put on film, you rotten, vicious, religious, these kind of ruthless, depraved, degenerate, the bad, surreptitious sinner. You don't put on Tefillin? Go fly a kite. Chabad, no. The guy says no. And the beautiful interview, the no becomes a very big yes. The Lashon HaKodesh, there already. It's a lot easier to say. I don't know where the Satmaru got that from, but it's not within the context of Torah. Lashon HaKodesh, all right, we speak other languages. Agreed. But the heart, with that ability, Lashon HaKodesh. And that's, let me end off with one story. When I was finally called up, because after the Yom Kippur War, they called up everyone. Until then, they never called up Anglos, because the State Department rejected it. But after the Yom Kippur War, we had no choice. So fine, I get called up, and again, they canceled, called up, Baruch HaTov, and Melech Olam Shekhon Yevet Verol. They canceled. There were reasons why, because I was 38, and they have to call you up with a unit your age, more or less, and health perimeters. Finally, the day comes, I'm now called up, and I have to take an exam in Hebrew proficiency, and every soldier has to take it. But and anyone who's like, I know someone in the army now, a Talmud, you all, those of you before Corona, you used to be here every time, is Steve Breschler. And Steve's grandson was just called up. So he's an American. He's taking in the army, the first thing they do is teach you Hebrew, because can you imagine, they tell you which way to hold the gun, and if you don't know Hebrew, you can shoot yourself. So I take the Hebrew proficiency exam, and the chayelet, the young girl, gives it back, and she's looking at me, and like her brains fell out. She said, "You got 100. And she says, "Israelis don't get 100. And I don't know, I was honest with the girl. I said to her, "Tishma, me'az shani ben achadas reishtei mesrei, ani korei yoter ivrit me'anglit." And she like couldn't believe her ears. But Bnei Akiva had that influence. I used to get Panim El Panim. Do you remember Charlie Panim El Panim, the newspaper, the magazine, the Alon? I used to go through it cover to cover. So Baruch Hashem, Adkan. Are there any questions on this part of the? Okay, my dear students listening, and those that will hear it across the world, and this is a very emotional moment for me, because I never thought I'd be able to reveal the whole story. And it's a great achievement. I don't want to downplay it. It will color Torah learning and Torah history, but learning more for hundreds of years to come when it plays out. What happened was the Zelt Chanukah, my dear friend, the Irwin Shapiro died. The next day was the funeral. And today, Zoom, every funeral, every wedding is on Zoom. I have a principle, I don't attend funerals, I don't attend weddings. I have to learn, I have to write. You know what, I'm in the middle of writing now. But my wife wanted to attend the funeral. When your wife wants to attend the funeral, boy, you better attend with her or you're in trouble. So I said, fine, I'll get the link, I'll turn it, and it was unbelievable. 1 hour funeral, 6 speakers. It was Hanukkah, it was on Zot Hanukkah. Not allowed to have Spaden, but all right, Abe, we crawl out of it. We're not talking Spaden, we're talking ethics, morals. All 6 speakers. All 6. His daughter, his son, 2 grandchildren, 2 world-famous rabbis. They all spoke about one aspect of Irvin, the tapes. Thousands. I couldn't believe my ears. All the secrets out in public. Let me begin this story. Larry Zeifman, Ribbono Shel Olam, it's the middle of the night where you are. Oh my gosh. Let me begin this story. 1969, a guy comes in Aliyah named Ani Rothkopf, soon changed legally to Aaron Rakefet. Aaron Rakefet had big problems here in Israel because he figured, let me see what's going on religiously. I go to Merkaz Harav, and I was a little upset. Their attitude towards academia, very negative at that time. I go to Yeshivat Hebron in Rehov HaYeshiva, right near Kikar Shabbat, and I couldn't believe my eyes. Mayor Chadash goes up to give a shmuis, half the yeshiva walks out. And then I hear them talking and their attitude towards some of them, not all. Yomo got very upset this morning and tells me something bad happened in Bnei Akiva. No, so what? Something bad happened, not a good at Yisrael. Not everyone is a tzaddik. Don't blame Bnei Akiva, blame the individuals. So I heard what they said about Svardim. I couldn't believe my ears. I learned a new Hebrew word which I won't repeat in public. And here I am in an epic-making event. BMT just began. They call me in, the first faculty, 69, 70. Now, this may have happened in 70 or 71. It happened in Rehov Arba Benel 24, the original location. And everyone was older. Students came to Israel junior year of college or post-college. And I have this student. He was either a junior or finished with college. I knew his parents. I had become friendly with them on the RCA tour in 68. His name, Jay Holzer. Wonderful, kind, good individual. And he loved my classes. And it seems I was the first Rebbe that inspired him, or to use colloquial English, turned him on. And his father wanted to reward me. His father by then was the Rav Shamas. I write about him in my work on the Rav, and I've spoken about him, Rabbi Manny Holzer, Zeche Tzadik Levracha. And Manny wanted to reward me. So Manny was recording the Rav, and he did some illegal things, which I can show you a shach, I can show you in Yoredeya. Maybe we can justify it to rob Torah. We're so hungry we can't be blamed for being thieves. So he would record the Rav, and he kept the copy for himself. So on what Manny used to call the specials, meaning the Tshuva Drasha, the Yahrzeit Drasha, the public talks, he made copies. These were reels, big reels. You don't remember them, Ben. Charlie remembers them. Remember the big reel? And he gives me a gift. No one gave me a greater gift in my life. There, I had the Rav. Clear. These were not secret recordings made a million miles away. It's made right from the Rav, like this is recording here. And I had my life right here in Israel. I don't have to go to Merkaz, don't have to go to Hebron. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and I remain a Talmud of the Rav. Now, over the years with Manny, I built up about 200 different Sheorim. About 1980, well, that first miracle happened in BMT. Unbelievable. About 1980, at the Kotel, Friday night, Irwin Shapiro, and let me tell you about Irwin Shapiro. He sought me out. I knew him from yeshiva. He was old. I taught his daughter, but in Michala. But, you know, Irwin was 5 years older. I was a poor kid from the Bronx, and he came from one of the few wealthy Orthodox families from Crown Heights. And Irwin knocks on my door. He says, "Aaron, I have enough wealthy friends. I want friends who know Torah and live Torah and teach Torah." We became bosom buddies. That Friday night at the Kotel, Irwin says to me, "Aaron, do you have tapes of the Rav?" And I don't know how he knew. It could be that Manny Holzer or Norma Holzer, who all knew, you know, everyone knew her, might have mentioned to Irwin, "Yeah, occasionally we give Rabbi Rakefet some tapes." "No, I'm at the Kotel, Natan. Do you ever tell a fib occasionally, a white lie?" I could have gotten away with every chapter in the world. I can't reveal this, a secret, a treasury. You know, I can't reveal the Rav doesn't. But at the Kotel, I said, "Yeah, I have some tapes." "Aaron, I want to talk with you after Shabbos." We formed a partnership. And we decided we're going to scour the world, search the world for as many share of the Rav we can come up with. Charlie, you're sitting at the eulogies when they said thousands of Sheyurim. They were correct. It is now 40 plus years later that our partnership began. And by the way, I have a letter from the family. After I wrote to them, you know, and the eulogies I moved, they wrote back to me, and we are living testimony that you worked hand in hand with my father. Yeah, I'm the one who started, and I work, you'll hear in a minute. We worked on this together. Thousands of shayur. Okay. Now, the problem begins. We're getting waters that I didn't even know. Vic, did you ever see a wire from the 1930s that they recorded on? 10 records. We have one yahrzeit shiur from 8 records. The wires we had to go to the Smithsonian Institute. It's a wire curving on up in the air. It's unbelievable. We had to pay a fortune. And I want to mention right now that Irwin, and helped by Barry Lieberman, I want to mention Barry's name too. Barry was quiet. Irwin makes noise. This ran hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, as you'll see. And this was no tax exemption. We couldn't let anyone know what we were doing for many reasons. And now we're getting all these reels, and I'm breaking them down from the reel to a cassette. You have no idea what's involved. One reel, this reel, was the Rav's talk at Rabbi Riskin's shul in the early 70s. I quote from it extensively in my work on the Rav. That reel, the Rav lent to someone, or someone got hold of it, and he listened, and it got twisted, and that's it. He threw it aside. Irwin gives it to me. My wife and I, and mainly my wife, because she has delicate fingers, a woman, we worked hours to straighten out the reel. Then I broke it down into cassettes. When were you in the Kolel? Could be in the non-Sunday class, because this class used to be at that time, I think, Wednesday, and then I changed, then Rabbi Aaron asked me to change it to Tuesday, because see, then now it changed to Monday. For years already, it's Monday. I gave that shiur word by word in English, translated from the Yiddish in the Kolel. Unbelievable. So then people that have tapes of the Rav, here, Irwin, he's going to break them down, and you know, you wanted cassettes, reels, no one already had. I had to buy second-hand tape recorders in Israel in a shop Harry Goodman's son, the Agudist from London, Taiman Aliyah, Kippah Sruga, his son, he had a shop on Rehov Shlomtzion HaMalka, secondhand. I remember buying a tape recorder. But then it reached a point, there were so many reels we were getting, I didn't have the time, I can't stop teaching. Now we have to find someone who is an expert in the latest techniques, how you break it down. Couldn't. We wound up giving it to a company in Brooklyn that worked with all the movie stars, the singers, the performers. I don't want to tell you, I was there helping, guiding. Irvin brought me to America. I disappeared from sight. No one knew where I was. It was between terms. Disappeared for 2 weeks. All my collegiate teaching, the kollel, just living with her in Irvin's house, going with him to his sheft in Williamsburg, big storehouse, if I'm using the right word, five stories from Civil War, a warehouse storage, and I had my area there working, and we go to see the Italian, didn't know what to do for us. He's making tens of thousands of dollars converting reels to cassettes. And I'm putting them in order, numbering. And then as time moves on, darn it, the world changes. I would give anything to go back to the right world where you called the number. You got a human being and you get help. Today you get artificial intelligence, a robot. One, press one, two, press two, press three, press star, three. God, get out of my life, you morons. But you can't change. We reached the conclusion that we have to computerize these sheurim. And we needed someone who, first of all, was a genius with computers, technical work, up to date with the changing world. Today, who has money? People come to me, beggars and shul, going around. I said, "Ani rak yachol letet lecha visa." They hear that, they run away. What a world. They walk around, people walking around, they're crossing the street, they're not looking at the cars. They're dealing with looking. We needed someone, and this is the real need. Mark, what I'm talking about will not help you one bit, because the heart, the greatness, the overwhelming height of the Rav, min daf kenin yiddish, eg min kentnish yiddish, zechals via tanken bunkers. You don't even know how I maledicted you now. Baruch Hashem. Then, now let's come to the kollel. A guy named Rakefet decided to teach himself something, Kol HaTorah, trying Kol HaTorah Kula. So you all know I began teaching the class in response to literature when the kollel began a formal program due to my conversation with Mr. Gris, etc. We'll leave that for another time. And I would make three tapes. We had a machine here, and it's probably downstairs. I don't think they threw it out. I could copy three tapes at a time from the master tape. And I would send these three tapes to America. It went to three different locations. One of them was Rabbi Leff, Bert Leff, Zeichet Zichrona Levracha, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. When Bert Leff finished, he gave the tapes to Newton Nordlich. Nordlich wanted to popularize the Rav's Torah, and clandestinely, whatever he could get hold of, he made copies and sold them. Sold them just to cover cost, I think $3 a tape. Without my knowledge, he started selling my tapes. When I found out years later, I said, Milty, I don't mind anyone selling my tapes. I don't listen. But I got to know this is happening. Why? Because if I'm only teaching the people in front of me, I can yell and shout and maledict and act like a moron. But if the tapes are going across the world, I got to be more careful what I say. You don't know what a Chesed Milty did. Why? Because there was a guy in Chabadnik from a wonderful Chabad family in Crown Heights, and he loved responsa literature. He started buying the tapes. And over the years, he got in touch with me. This person, Aryeh Lieberman, who we all owe such thanks to, technology, A number one. Yiddish, perfect. English, perfect. Zitzfleisch, perfect. Irwin, I brought them together. Irwin hired him. He worked for years. Gentlemen, we have thousands, I don't want to give the exact number, but it's thousands of Sheurim of the Rav, organized perfectly in the most advanced computer program of today. Aryeh Liebman, Irwin would say to me, Aaron, your greatest find as a Rebbe is Aryeh Lieberman. All right, I don't know. If that's the compliment, I also have Rebbe. I also have students became Rashi Yeshiva, Gedolei Yisrael, Talmidei Chachamim, etc., etc. But Ein Hachinami, Irwin is right. Now, why did we keep this all? Why do we have to keep this all quiet? Because of family reasons. I can't go into detail. Some of you lived in the 1990s, there was a big lawsuit between Chaim Soloveitchik and Julie Berman, and what went on. And until today, even though everyone knows about it, that's all they spoke about, like Irwin did nothing else in his life but the tapes. I also want to mention one other name. I want to put all the names out because it begins in the classroom. Jay Holzer, Manny Holzer, Aaron Rakefet, Irwin Shapiro, Barry Lieberman, Aryeh Lieberman, not to be confused with Barry, although one spells it L-I-E, that's Aryeh, Barry is L-I-B. And both of them have deep connections to Chabad, by the way. One other person I want to mention, my dear Talmud, Steve Gross. Steve, and I told you the story many times, I repeat it for the sake of making this little recording complete. He was never my student in the classroom, but he went to YU when I was teaching. And his parents lived on the Upper West Side, but they didn't want him to waste time traveling. Devote yourself to your studies. So he stayed in the dorm, and he would always tell me when the kids came back, you know, at night, so the kids that had, I don't want to mention names, this Rebbe, that Rebbe, a third Rebbe, they come back maledicting the Rebbeim, furious with the Rebbeim. But the kids that had Rabbi Rothkopf, he said they always came back happy, inspired. Only positive words. So he knew about me in the 60s. He, in Israel, we became very close. And he was constantly going back and forth to America, family reasons, his parents, etc. And his business was computerizing. He computerized Irwin Shapiro's entire business. And he would go where he would be called to computerize. And he did a... He would always carry back and forth the reels for me, the cassettes, I broke them down, back to America. He was our, I would say, the totally trustworthy messenger, because everything had to be kept quiet. Now, what is my dream and wish? Number one, a class be organized right here in Gris in Yiddish. Mindaf Fashtein Arayim Chatin Yiddish. And two, I only hope in my lifetime I will be able to present Yehoshua with a little box in it, thousands of Sheyurim of the Rav, organized Yahrzeit drushes, Tshuva drushes, public talks, Chumash, Hashkafa. You know what else we have, Charlie? Some of the classrooms, the Sheurim. Those are in English, the later ones. Baba Batra, Bab Metzia. Ach, you know what else we have? Some of the Sanhedrin Sheurim from the 50s. And in one of the Sheurim, I played it in the Kollel for everyone to hear decades ago, is the shiur where I come up with a svara and the Rav sagt mir, what are you? Was binst du? Are you from Rabbi? And the whole world defends laughing. An hour later, the Rav says, Zepistar, that I, what I said, he couldn't totally dismiss. My dear students, I'm very happy to get this off my chest. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu that I live to be able to tell it in public. I'm just upset that it came about through the funeral, but on the other hand, Baruch Hashem, it's out in public. Let me just see if I could find it. One second. No, as usual, pages get lost on my desk, but here it is. Here, this is from Irwin's son. Dear Rabbi Rakefet, thank you for your meaningful words of consolation. Dad cherished your friendship. I had a front row seat watching your partnership with Dad in the preservation of the Rav's Torah. Future generations are grateful to you for the countless hours devoted by you to this important work. And I say it's Hashgacha Pratit Mina Shamayim, what happened in BMT, and what happened in the Kollel, that I should go into the world of responsible literature and take a look at the results. So, Ani Modeh LaKadosh Baruch Hu, next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, I'll clue you in on what came out of the Kotel that influences the Israeli army until this very moment and will influence it for all generations to come. Let me turn to the world. Yomo! Natan, I guess Yomo's gearing up for your wedding because he kept awake the whole shiur. Open it up. Open it up. They can speak. Are there any questions from around the world?
Yes, if I may.
Yes, anyone may. Go ahead.
When the Midrash Sifrei says that Tinok Masila Daber,
right, be told, right, Ivri.
That would be a mitzvah, and we don't do that. We really ignore it.
I'll only tell you the following. In Chutz Laaretz, we spoke Hebrew to our children. In Israel, we spoke English to our children. But, you understand what I'm saying. But I want you to know, I have some great-grandchildren who are fluent in English. In other words, and my grandchildren who are fluent and actually did doctorates in English, they kiss us because they say, thank you that you insisted on talking English to our mother, our parents. But we have to be realistic. Life is such that obviously it's easier. Look, when I'm together with my all my Israeli granddaughters-in-law, many of them speak English to us, and even if they don't speak English, they allow us to speak in English at the Shabbos table, and they say we understand every word. They'll answer us or speak up in Hebrew, but they understood every word we said in English. So there's a certain reality, life and the ideal blend into one. But there's no question that the ability to speak Hebrew is certainly a mitzvah in the words of the Rambam. You can see the sources in Aryeh Shvat's wonderful writings. It's a mitzvah kala. But there's a reality. Look at the way you're dressed. Look at the way I'm dressed. Why aren't we dressed like Avraham Avinu, like Yitzhak Avinu, like Yaakov Avinu, like Moshe Rabbeinu? Like, all right, Aaron a Kohen. I can't dress. I'm not a Kohen. Alan, are you a Kohen? Rabbi Yehuda, are you a Kohen?
Levi.
Levi, all right, you're almost there. You're better than I am, at least. Okay, are there any more? Thank you for the question. But I think we have to approach it realistically.
Rabbi,
yeah, Mark?
There is a theory that the etymology of the word Shlumiel comes from the Nasi of Shimon, Shlumiel.
All right.
So the reason that, as hard as he tried, he's the Nasi on the fifth day, and could never get it to come out on Shabbos.
You've seen that? Or are you guessing?
I've seen that as one of the etymologies of the term.
Very fascinating, because that fits in with the Lubavitcher Rebbe's talk. Yeah.
It can never come out according to our current calendar, or even Alpiriya.
Alpiriya?
When the calendar is Alpiriya.
No, Alpiriya could probably come out. In other words, Aria already upsets the whole system.
Yes, it is.
But we have to...
When the Nazi was a Nazi, right, it was before the current calendar.
All right, say the... But I'll show a lin... I'll have Dashanut. We'll get to that next week with the Dashanut, actually. But we'd have to ask Dr. Gvirtz. Dr. Gvirtz is the expert, Bill Gvirtz. In New Jersey, and we'd have to ask him that question. Maybe he's listening, or he'll pick it up in YU Torah. All right, is there anyone else? I have to... Larry?
First of all, I don't get credit for staying up in the middle of the night. We're here in Yad Binyamina. We're here for most of the winter.
Yad Binyamina.
Okay. So the school in Toronto that you're referring to was founded by the Hungarians who came after the war. Yeah, I don't believe that it was ever a settler school.
Uh-huh.
I think you're referring to Sodia Torah. It may have been nominally organized by settler, but settler was never a terribly strong organized community in Toronto.
Uh-huh.
And that school certainly, while it services the entire Haredi community, was never officially settler. I'm sorry, I missed the name of the Rebbe.
One second. I just have to be a little quicker because there's a class coming in. But one second, let's get the name. But he was influenced, I mean, according to this, he was influenced by the Sabbath Hasidim. His name was Avraham Tzvi Greenwald, was the grandfather. And that's the one who taught, that's the person, Avram Tzvi Greenwald, and his...
I don't recognize the name at all.
You don't recognize...
Jack does, but I don't recognize the name at all.
No, Jack also is indicating he doesn't recognize the name, but we're talking about someone who died, must be... my father passed away the 14th day of Kislev, 1988.
Right, okay. So I mean, Jack or I would remember the family, but I don't recognize the name at all. So they never migrated to Chabad in any way.
Okay.
They may have been settler, but the school was
right,
not...
Right, so. And I wouldn't say... Living in a Satma community, I heard complaints. I would imagine there were a few Satma in Toronto, and he was part of it. If you know anyone, check it out.
The biggest benefactors of that school was the Reichman family.
Reichmans.
Who were certainly not Satma.
Right.
And many of their descendants have, you know, are you know, nominally very close to the religious Zionist tradition.
Right. I know some of them. I want to just see if it says the school. One second. My father teacher, Adopt Israel, Washington Heights. No, it just says moved to Toronto where a couple had found, that was his father-in-law, a position in a Satmar yeshiva. That's all I have. So you say it's, okay, you say the Yisodei Torah, but I would imagine that this is totally accurate because it's been spoken about and published and republished a number of times, and then generally speaking, what they issued from Kfar Chabad, their publication, is got its feet on the ground. It doesn't fly. It says, as someone just said to me last night, Kfar Chabad, you're not going to find Messianists. In Israel, the Messianists exist in Tzfat, and I'm told also in Yerushalayim, in the yeshiva there. But Kfar Chabad is feet on the ground, like the Shluchim. All right, I want to thank everyone for honoring me with their presence, both, I think it's the biggest crowd we've had in the room since Corona today. Yeah, I think so. And until we meet again in health and happiness, das vidanya.